Good morning. The lesson is from Mark 9, verses 30 to 37. The boss man was pretty cool to me this week. I thank you very much. He wasn't too hard on me. They went on from there and passed through Galilee, and he would not have known anyone knew it. For he was teaching his disciples, saying to them, "The Son of Man will be delivered into the hands of men, and they will kill him. And when he is killed, after 3 days he will rise." But they did not understand the saying, and they were afraid to ask him. And they came to Capernaum, and when he was in the house, he asked them, "What were you discussing on the way?" But they were silent. For on the way they had discussed with one another who was the greatest. And he sat down and called the 12, and he said to them, "If anyone would be first, he must be last of all and servant of all." And he took a child and put him in the midst of them. And taking him in his arms, he said to them, "Whoever receives one such child in my name receives me, and whoever receives me receives not me, but him who sent me." This ends the reading of God's blessings.
Thank you, Kathy. What y'all didn't know about when we were talking, she told me I better give her a nice passage. not anymore. A quick way to start a fight between sports fans is to say who is the greatest at any position or team. For example, since this is football season, might ask who is the greatest NFL quarterback? Would it be Tom Brady?
No.
That's pretty definitive. I see what happens for the next one. Peyton Manning? Aaron Rodgers? Yeah, pretty good. Ben? Who would it be? Among golfers, you might ask, in their heyday, who would have won a head-to-head match? Jack Nicklaus or Tiger Woods? To go back a few years, I want to ask you about ball players. You remember Magic Johnson and Larry Bird and the great rivalry that they had? Well, I was reading recently about a Larry Bird fan named Eric Torpy, and I want to tell you how much he admired Larry Bird. In 2005, he was sentenced to 30 years for armed robbery and attempted murder. And when he was given the 30 years, he said, "Give me 33. Why did he want 33 years instead of 30? Larry Bird's number. After a few years in prison, he said, should have just let it be 30. Some sports fans are truly fanatical. And one thing they are fanatic about is who is the greatest in any particular sport. Now, some of you may remember a soccer player named Pelé. I really never saw him play myself, but you would always see him on TV and talking about him. Whether he was the greatest international sports star of all time is a matter of conjecture, but he was an amazing sports celebrity. He was such an internationally acclaimed soccer star that they even stopped a war for him. Now, the nation of Nigeria, and I don't know if I say this right, because it was only a nation for 3 years, Biafra, thank you, were at war with each other, and Pelé needed to go from Nigeria to Biafra so they could play soccer. So what did these two countries do? They stopped fighting so that he could travel safely between the two countries. On any sports greatness scale, he certainly stands pretty tall. Floyd Mayweather, who just finished 49-0, if he doesn't come back, is proclaiming that he is the greatest fighter of all times. Not in my estimation, but he's definitely the greatest how would you say, self-promoter, and certainly the richest boxer of all time. Edmonton Oilers head coach Ted Green got word that Sean Van Allen, one of his star players, had suffered a concussion, and he could not remember his name, could remember who he was. So the coach looked at him and said, "Tell him he's Wayne Gretzky. Maybe he'll play better." Seeking to be number one is as old as Cain and Abel, Jacob and Esau, Joseph and his brothers. The drive to be recognized as the greatest even infected Jesus' disciples. They were passing through northeastern Galilee, heading towards Capernaum. It was the first leg of their final journey towards Jerusalem. Jesus is getting them ready, letting them know that he is going to die. He's going to be gone. So they came to Capernaum after an absence of some months. Jesus had noted some bickering by his disciples while they were on the road, and when they got into the house, Jesus asked them, "What have you been arguing about amongst yourselves?" They kept quiet because they were ashamed to say that they were arguing about who is the greatest among these disciples. Matters of rank are important in any organization, so it was only natural for the disciples to be concerned about their status in his upcoming messianic kingdom. We might think such conversations would produce a major headache for the master, but he understood their feelings that this was natural. He understood that such drives are a part of being human. These drives to be number one come from God. After sitting down, which was the recognized way of teaching for a Jewish teacher, Jesus gathered the 12 around him and began to teach them. If anyone wants to be first in God's kingdom, he must be willing to be the very last and servant of all. Jesus did not chastise them for wanting to be first. He was not condemning anyone's desire to improve their position in life. Notice how the verse reads. Sitting down, Jesus called the 12 and said, "Anyone who wants to be first must be the very last and the servant of all." It's okay to be number one, but you need to, in a servant, put yourself last to rise to being number one. Jesus is not saying to his disciples that it is wrong to want to be the greatest. He's saying if you want to be first, if you want to be great, here's what you must do. You must be willing to serve. He's not condemning their ambition. Ambition is an impulse given to us by God to help better our lives and even society. A person with no ambition can be a drag on society. I got the title of today's message from a theme song from the 70s and 80s. Many of you remember the Jeffersons. Do you recall how the theme song went? I know you all do. Well, we're moving on up to the east side, to a deluxe apartment in the sky. Moving on up to the east side, we finally got a piece of the pie. The Jeffersons, one of the longest running sitcoms in American television history, focused on George and Louise Jefferson, an affluent African American couple living in New York City. The show was one of the first to portray a successful black family, paving the way for future sitcoms and helped open up things for African Americans in our society. Who would argue with the idea that it's a good thing for African Americans to see an example of success among their own people on television, even if it was a silly sitcom? It is not against Christian values to achieve a comfortable lifestyle for your family, as long as that material drive and success doesn't become the primary drive in your life. Christ understood that the drive to move on up in life is a part for all of us. Author Steve May tells about a working mother in the 30s named Mildred Benson, who was a columnist for a paper in Ohio. Benson's husband was terminally ill, so to help provide for her family, she devoted her spare time with a dream that she had nurtured for many years. Under the pen name of Carolyn Keene, she began writing mystery novels for young girls. You may have heard of the main character in those mystery novels, Nancy Drew. Benson was surprised at the impact that his fictional character had on the lives of so many of his readers. Many girls and women found the inspiration to improve their lives through Nancy's story. Her parents didn't think that she could write and were convinced that she would never, ever be able to make a living from doing it. But she had a dream, a very lofty ambition, and she became internationally known and helped improve lives and improved her own life by going after her dream. There's no shame whatsoever in being ambitious as long as you don't abuse people in trying to achieve your ambitions. As long as you balance that ambition with your love for God and love for your neighbor. Jesus was not condemning the disciples for their ambition. He was trying to make a point that greatness in his kingdom is determined by service and not by status. Jesus was saying to his disciples, if you want to be first, here's what you must do. You must learn to serve others. You want to be number one in business? Get a reputation for service. Same can be said, of course, in the church. When Thomas Watson Sr. started IBM, he laid out some core values for his company. Two of those values were excellent service and respect for the individual. In the Greek, Mark uses the word diakonos, for servant and not doulos, which can be also interpreted, doulos, as slave. The word diakonos simply suggests one who attends the needs of others freely and willingly. So there's a big difference there. This is a contrast to doulos, which refers to one who acts in servitude under obligation and compulsion and really has no choice. It's an important distinction. We are to serve God freely and joyfully out of a sense of love and not really a sense of obligation or feel that we are made to do it. It's very interesting to me how Jesus makes this point. He set a child among the disciples, taking the child in his arms. He said to them, whoever welcomes one of these little ones in my name welcomes me. And whoever welcomes me does not welcome me, but the one who sent me. In both Jewish and Greco-Roman societies, children were considered to be on the very bottom of society. And these societies idealized mature adults, especially males. To welcome or show kindness to one of these little children in his name is equivalent to welcoming Jesus himself, but not only Jesus, but a Heavenly Father. It is this perspective that dignifies the act of serving others. God is not concerned about titles or positions. Not concerned about your status. He doesn't care if you're the CEO in the company or the one that's outside cutting the grass. Titles do not impress God or qualify you to be a great man or woman. What qualifies you is your willingness to serve and care and love other people. In God's kingdom, greatness is always about servanthood. Since everybody can serve, you don't have to have a college degree. You do not have to have had to make all A's in school. You don't have to know the difference between Plato and Aristotle, and you don't have to know and understand Einstein's theory of relativity to serve. You only need a heart full of grace and love, a soul generated by love. Now I hope, as you look ahead to what remains of your life, that you will determine to make this your legacy. Whatever else you leave behind, I hope that you want to leave this world a better place, your neighborhood, your family, and even yourself. You know what the secret to is a great legacy? And you already know, service. Service in your church. Service in your community. Service to the little children. Service to young people. Service to the elderly and the poor. Those shut away. Some of you remember Dave Thomas. I shared this a few years ago. The founder of Wendy's. He died in 2002. Dave's congenial face became a very familiar sight to millions of people throughout, and because of his commercials on television. They've also appeared in training film for Winnie's employees, and he had a very unique ability to identify with his employees. Dave Thomas was a remarkable success story. He was adopted as a child. He never finished high school. In his early book, Well Done, The Common Guy's Guide to Everyday Success, David said he got his MBA long before he got his GED. He says he has a photograph of himself in his MBA graduation outfit, a snazzy, knee-length work apron. He calls it leading by example. At Wendy's, MBA doesn't mean matter of business administration. It means mop bucket commitment or attitude. David Thomas taught all of his employees that service comes before success. That's the legacy that Dave Thomas left the Wendy's restaurant chain, which is still very, very successful today. Jesus also left a legacy for his followers. He did it by wrapping a towel around his waist on the night when he was betrayed and washing the disciples' feet. He taught them to serve by his own ultimate example. So how are you doing while you're moving on up in society? Are you learning to serve? Philip Yancey wrote in his book, The Jesus I Never Knew, said you can gauge the size of a ship that has passed out of sight by the size of the wake that it leaves behind. What kind of wake will you leave behind? Will the water ripple because you have been here? The word is service. Service to your church, service to your community, service to those who need it the most. I pray that all of you, all of us, are moving on up and we find a place to serve. May God bless you. Amen.